the HNL. Now, if I move on to what we've been aiming to do with this study, essentially the previous study provided distributions and event selection tables motivating these cuts. And while signal yields were shown, there were no sensitivity projections provided due to the limited Monte Carlo statistics. So what we were aiming to do to begin with was perform new sensitivity studies using the Winter 23 background samples, which have high statistics, as well as exploring additional variables. On the bottom, you can see a table that I took from the FCC note, just showing the raw events we had available for each of the Z-pol samples and the increase in statistics relative to the Spring 23, 21 samples. And I think one thing that's worth noting here is that actually, quite a lot of time was spent trying to understand the differences between the Spring 21 and the Winter 23 samples in terms of object definitions and also the reconstruction. But even with this increase in statistics, we're still heavily limited here. And if you look at the effective luminosity of these samples, it's very, very low. And actually, quite a lot of effort throughout these projects ended up being diverted to investigating skimmed Monte Carlo samples in KEEPER-HEP and how these could be used to boost the background statistics. But sadly, I won't talk about that in much more detail today. Okay, so the last update I gave in this forum was actually at the end of August. And rather than going through everything again, I'd encourage anyone that wants to look at the slides, which gives a bit more historical information. And what I instead wanted to do was highlight what has happened since then. So in terms of the main progress, I documented the work in an FCC note, which you can see linked on the slide. So this work was still using 150 inverse femtobarns for the luminosity. And this can be relatively quickly updated based on discussions on the correct luminosity to use. But as some will know, there's been a lot of discussion online, sorry, not online, offline, about how to correctly do the normalization for the Z-pol run for the HNL searches, assuming that actually the luminosity planned is a, varies across several centre of mass energies near the Z-pol. And so we will need to do some adjustments to the effective luminosity if we want to handle this properly. So basically, everything in the FCC note still assumes 150 inverse atabon, sorry, which was what was used for the SNOMAS study. And it can be updated as and when we want to. And this study includes preliminary one event and four event signal contours for a background pre-search. And on the left, sorry, on the right-hand side of this slide, you can see a distribution for events in the Winter 23 samples, where you require two electrons and veto on muons and photons. And this distribution is of the number of displaced vertices reconstructed in the event. So this wasn't considered in the previous SNOMAS study, but we implemented the displaced vertex reconstruction. And in particular, considered the kind of effective background rejection you get by applying some fairly stringent requirements on this. Unfortunately, again, because of the limited background statistics, you run out of Monte Carlo events pretty quickly. So in the note, if you read in detail, essentially made an argument that by the time you combine a relatively tight displaced vertex requirement with a jet veto, then this effectively removes all of the background. But of course, this would have to be checked further. And you can see that, yeah, if you look at the various signal benchmark points that are shown by the colored lines in the slide, that actually we're retaining a reasonable amount of the signal by requiring exactly one displaced vertex. Okay, in terms of other updates, also went through and provided a two-page summary of the E plus E minus study, where yields at that point were updated to 205 inverse, 205 inverse atabon. I'm afraid I'm in LHC mode, so I'll have to correct that. And you can see a link to the overleaf document on the slide if you're interested. In terms of technicalities, I changed it so that the signal contour we were considering was for three events, assuming a background free search. And this was following some harmonization studies with others working on HNL. And on the right, you can see basically an attempted overlay plot. the sensitivity you would get from this study, alongside the previous FCC-EE projections that were provided for the past European strategy and various other experimental constraints from the CMS and LHCB. And I think a thing that's quite reassuring here is that while the sensitivity you get from this study alone is inside the FCC, previous FCC-EE line, it does extend at some smaller values of the couplings and higher masses, but also the initial FCC-EE line corresponds to a combination of all channels, so semi-daptonic and hadronic as well, whereas this study was just considering one channel, so it should indeed be conservative. But it's again been quite nice to have a look at what effective signal efficiencies we get for these processes in a more realistic experimental environment, because I think previous studies assumed that it was 100% efficient. And again, as noted on the previous slide, I guess would nominally aim to perform a rerun of these results based on whatever we converge on as being the recommended luminosities or cross sections to use for the samples. Right, because this is quite a short talk, I thought I would try and put some kind of headlines together on the next slide. So the main thing was, following on from the SNOMAS results, we found that, again, subject to limited background statistics, we could hopefully perform a background research by vetoing depth, vetoing depth muons of photons and placing a requirement of exactly one displaced secondary vertex reconstructed with traps with a D0 greater than 2 millimeters. And you can see the cut flow tables from the FCC note just below there. And again, you see that by the time you combine the displaced vertex requirement with the jet veto requirement, we get the background rejection factors that we would need in order to hopefully provide a background research. We then produce a contour for all signal models with at least three events after this selection. And this has been used to create the contours you can see on the previous slide. And I think the only other thing that I should say is that if we were to access larger background samples, we could do further optimization using additional variables. So on some level, this might actually be this might be conservative in the sense of we put very, very hard requirements on the secondary vertex reconstruction in order to assume that the search would be background free. Okay. So to conclude and wrap up, so I think what I've really been trying to do for the last few months is kind of tie some loose ends on studies that have been ongoing for some time. In the FCC note, EE note, I also tried to, I guess, provide a bit more explanation of understood differences between the spring 21 samples and the winter 23 samples. And this is mainly so that you know, future studies can have a clear history of what has changed and why results might look very different now compared to what they did before. The sensitivity seems consistent with what was shown in previous projections for the European strategy, and these were based on theoretical assumptions. So you essentially assume your search will be background free and that you have 100% signal efficiency for a particular topology. And these were also, as I said before, typically assuming a combination of all channels. I've also mentioned that further studies would benefit from larger Monte Carlo statistics, and this, I think, is a planned next focus, which I know a few of us are interested in. And then if we go to the right, in terms of looking ahead, so I don't have any students working on this at the moment, but I would be interested to collaborate in future on looking at whether we could produce a kind of combined contour for a displaced vertex search, assuming all possible decays of the HNL for the electron coupling. I think that would probably allow us to provide the most, I guess, the closest comparison with the theoretical lines that have been shown in the past. And I think if we could do that, that would be very nice. Also, would like to move forward with the infrastructure for producing some skimmed Monte Carlo samples. And I know that others are already looking at this, but I'd be eager to collaborate on full simulation studies. And whilst, of course, the midterm report is, well, sorry, the SEC study is wrapping up. I would be very interested to keep studying these areas further afterwards. So yeah, if you have similar interests, please reach out. I think that's everything from me. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much, Sarah. That's always very interesting to see. I will have some questions, but I see that Patricia has been having the hand raised since a while. So, Patricia, do you want to start?
Yeah, I did not want to interrupt, but I needed to remember to raise my hand. Yes, just the previous, I think previous slide. It's mostly information for me because I haven't seen, no, the one before I, yet. Yeah, this one. Because I haven't, I haven't been following these plots very carefully. So I just wanted to know the origin of the CMS and Atlas curves. Are these the full run two ones? Where did you get them? Do we have a reference?
I think I've provided the reference in the note, or if not, I can add it. But it's from
Okay.
the UCL website that provides the. So I think this is the future one because these lines have FCC and LHCC and click on as well.
So
So
you're saying that this is a reference to a new Atlas and CMS curve?
I think it's the Atlas and CMS Hi-Lumi LHC projection.
I don't, okay, because I'm down. I mean, I've been pestering people to get those type of lines. So I'm very surprised that there is one and I didn't know about it. So I will check. It's very possible, we're all busy.
Isn't
So
it this one
maybe.
that comes from the website that I'm adding in the chat? Isn't it coming from there?
Okay, I will check that because
That
this
is
was
not
CMS.
it's not I mean this has been there since a while, but it's relatively updated.
No,
I don't.
okay. So the old one was not separated in CMS and Atlas. The old one was Hi-Lumi LHC, was more or
Yes.
less there, but was not separated. That's why I'm surprised that it's split in CMS and Atlas. Okay. CMS has made an effort to combine some of the run two. And we wanted to make an effort to extrapolate, but this is still not happening yet.
Well,
So I will check your reference,
yeah,
okay?
check that one.
Because
It's the second, in the second plot. To me, it looks like it's the same curve. And Atlas and CMS, they have some displaced vertices, but this has been there since a
this
while.
should be rescaling. I think this is taking CMS and Atlas and rescaling for high luminosity. Because as Patricia said, I don't remember CMS and Atlas coming out with high lumi
No,
projections for
it is
this.
not approved. Absolutely. They
And
also do not want to do it. So I'm in the middle of that. So I can tell you that maybe this is someone that just took and rescaled, and maybe theorists that presented in a talk. But as CMS exists, there is not a new line. Okay. So I just want to check that. It's okay. We don't have to
Just
discuss
to
that.
clarify, I actually just checked it behind the scene. You're right, it's a theory paper extrapolating the Atlas and CMS limits to Hi-Lumi.
Okay.
And this
So
is.
I will double check that thing. I will check all the references that you have in the chat. Then the other question is that the green bigger FCCEE, is this the old theory one or is the one that we usually show from analysis?
So I can again probably
I
very
think
quickly.
this is the old theory one also because it goes down and it should not go below the 5 GV.
Yeah, so, these are just the lines that come from that UCL website that
Yeah,
Rebecca.
okay. So before we do all this, we're gonna go through the whatever has been discussed. Okay, thank you. And then instead your line is the blue one that says this study, correct? Okay, and you have as a distance, as a long lived, just that cut on the D0.
Yeah, exactly. So it's very conservative because we don't really have the statistics to try to.
Right. No, I'm not, you don't have to justify it. It's just for me to understand what to compare with what, okay?
So I think what I was trying to go for here is assuming that what we might like is to have, say, the EE plot and the EJJ and any other
Mew
plot
mew.
getting the
Of
same
course. Yeah,
on the same
but
plane.
yeah, I mean,
yes, that's the final goal. Yes, not terribly easy, but it will be the final goal. What I'm more concerned now for the strategy are really also the other curves, especially also from the High Lumi and the other experiments. I know that we worry about the FCC, but it's important that the other ones that we overlay with make sense and then don't generate discussion. Okay, thank you. I don't want to keep too much time. I see many hands.
But I want to comment something here that for our own final plot, we don't need necessarily to add Atlas and CMS if they are
Absolutely
not
not.
updated. So,
No, exactly.
but what I'm thinking is that what we will want to do is to, for the challenge we don't have, try to extrapolate in some way. So, it's something to discuss altogether.
Yes,
And
we can keep it to just FCC. I mean, I think that having a plot like this now, it's good for our internal thing. But even in your note, you might have a plot just with the FCC, okay? Or maybe the older stuff, the very old stuff that has been shown a million times, and then we know which is the one in the next page. And we all know that that is not maybe correct for the iLumi, but it's okay. We just want to care about our own intrinsic coherence and for all the discussion that will come on the luminosity normalization combination, etc. Let's just forget about the other curves. That would be my suggestion.
okay. I think we are going to need to move on in a bit, but there was also a question about the luminosity,
Yeah,
right? And the
let's keep
norm.
it offline for now, I think.
Okay, we can
I think
keep it
it's
offline.
good to have. I think it's good to have for now everything with like the standard number, and then the new discussion, the new cooking, and different cross section as a function of the Z. We'll take it offline. We'll discuss in another. We take another decision for now. Just let's be consistent with the past
Okay, thank
as
you,
much as
Patricia.
can I actually
So.
though? So is this temporary thing then? Are we using 205 or are we using 150?
We are using whatever it is on the latest numbers that I posted on the physics performance and that are on the main page. Those are the numbers to be used for the final report.
So the thing is
Are
that
then, are
that
they,
neither of
is.
those numbers are the numbers we have been using though.
Yeah, so that's fine.
I have added a link there. Patricia, can you confirm that this note that is in the new repository, that is the new CDS, is the same as what you are sharing in the website?
I don't. Why do we go through a million notes? We put it on the main web page.
Okay, well,
I
I mean,
don't appreciate. Let me go here. I'll post here the
can you
link.
share the main page? Then I think
Yes,
maybe it's
just
better.
one second. I'll do it. You can take the other questions. I will
All
just
right. We should
update.
move it up because we are very delayed, but I think
Exactly.
Jan was the first that raised the hand and then Jeremy. So Jan, please go ahead.
Actually, can we actually move on to my talk because I don't have a lot of time. I know I was a little late, but I do have to go in about 20 minutes. So can we maybe push these questions to a later time?
I mean, technically, you have 10 minutes for your talk plus five of comments, but okay. I mean, Jeremy, maybe you can also write it down in the chat so Sarah can answer before she has to leave also then. Let's try to do
Very
it that way.
quickly. The blue and the red lines are from my LHC study. It's theory curves, and the green one is the old theory curve, which should be updated.
Okay,
Okay.
thank you.
My point is 2 seconds. It's really, yes, Sarah, we're interested in discussing this analysis with you also, and in particular about the benchmark points, so we can interact offline. We'd be very happy to talk to you.
Yeah, sounds great. Just send me an
Very
email.
nice. All right, very good. So then, thank you so much, Sarah, again. It's a very nice update, and we get to Richard then.
Sarah, can you stop and sharing? Sorry.
All
There
good.
you go. Wonderful. Bueno. Yes, it did not crash this time. Okay. I know we want to get more to questions, and so I'll try to be quick so we can actually maybe discuss more about Sarah's talk. So first, thank you for the intro for the invitation, and so yeah, I just wanted to give a kind of a summary looking at beyond the EE program. Because we've accumulated a lot of numbers and promising outlook for the FCCHH, which is a companion for the FCCEE LHLHC program. And so this is also more generally about neutrino mass models. So the big picture is that we know that neutrino masses are an issue, and we have to reconcile this with the standard model. But what I one of the things I like to emphasize is that we really like right-headed neutrinos, and they're really, really well motivated. But as we've learned lessons with, say, supersymmetry, it's at the LHC, we can't put all our eggs into one basket, and we should be very careful about over-promising the deliverables for the FCCEE. And so what do I mean by that is to also say that in addition to our sensitivity to heavy neutrinos or axions and all that stuff or other long-lived particles, there's this whole spectrum, this whole collection of neutrino mass models. And so the important part is that the anything that you hypothesize to solve the lightness of neutrinos, they have to couple to the standard model Higgs somehow. They have to couple to the standard model leptons, obviously to neutrinos. And this often introduces lepton number violation, lepton flavor violation. This is what we try to see at the collider experiments. And this is what Sarah was showing in her nice plots. Implicitly in all of the stuff, there is some lepton flavor violation going on there. And while we can't Well, it's difficult to verify lepton number violation at FCCEE. It's not maybe impossible. And so the intendment is I hope to just give a sort of a snapshot of the FCC, and particularly the HH sensitivity to neutrino mass models. This isn't our first rodeo. We had the snow mass exercises in North America the past couple of years, and there was also the previous European strategy update. And the FCC EE program is a very mature program, and so but the FCCHH program, we can still use more numbers to really build up this case. And because this isn't, while some of these numbers are a little old, I mean, it's not like FCC has changed in the past 10 years. And so for broader, so some of the numbers I'm pulling are from a pair of reviews. So I think this 1812 paper is what you guys have, what Sarah was showing for the high luminosity LHC reach and the FCCHH reach. And there's also newer work, stuff with Patricia, Rebecca, and Julia, of course. And there's newer stuff by the community. So I'm just going to kind of sample a couple things, and this will not be an exhaustive talk. But I'll just kind of skip into right-headed neutrinos just because this is one of the more popular things. And unfortunately, I had a connection problem, so I couldn't go before Sarah. But yes, the benchmarks that are typically used is that you consider either a Dirac, pseudo Dirac, or Dirac-like, or Majorana mass eigenstate, and you get this by swapping out the chiral state with light and heavy mass eigenstates. And the reason why you want to choose, I'd recommend doing the Dirac or Majorana situations as benchmarks for discovery purposes, is that realistically you're either going to get sort of a sub-GeV Majorana states or pseudo Dirac states that are can be at any mass scale. But anyway, I won't say much about this. This is a previous plot with Julia and company, and the kind of the details that have gone into these sort of plots were just presented by Sarah. And the community message is that current next-gen facilities can probe the simplest leptogenesis scenarios with right-headed neutrinos. Going beyond that, if you are considering heavier fellows, at the TeV or 10 TeV scales, you're actually able to get quite far into the ultra-high masses. Was there a question or? Okay, that's fine. And of course, if you do discover something, one of the first things, at least for the heavy neutrinos case, that you want to do is polarization measurements, because there are subtle helicity inversion and differences between the kinematics for lepton number conserving processes and lepton number violating processes. If often is said that the differences between Dirac and Majorana states, that's not quite true, because a Majorana state can produce lepton, can conserve, can contribute to lepton number conserving processes. The difference in kinematics stems from whether or not you're looking for a lepton number conserving a lepton number violating process, and that's where the differences of the kinematics come from. It's not a Dirac versus Majorana, it's lepton number conserving versus lepton number violating processes. Okay, so you know, I don't need to say much more about heavy neutrinos. Other stuff, kind of the fun stuff that's appeared in more recent years is attempts to test the Weinberg operator itself at the PP colliders. So in many ways, searches for same sign WW scattering at the LHC is a high energy realization of neutrinoless double beta decay. And there are numbers, already at the LHC with the searches vector boson scattering, you're able to limit set an upper bound on the effective Majorana mass for neutrinos at the 10 GeV scale. For electron, you know, this is constrained more stringently, of course, at neutrinoless double beta decay experiments. But it should be emphasized that this is actually the first constraint to the Weinberg operator outside a nuclear environment. No one else has been able to do this, and so this is kind of the sort of the first time, and it's the first constraints on the mixed flavor channels. And so the projections are at the 10 GeV level for high Lumi, and at the at 100 TeV collider down to the GeV or sub GeV. So it's still, you know, high compared to normal order and inverse ordering, but the naive picture breaks down very quickly if there are multiple sources lepton number violation. That's why it's kind of important to do these broad tests. Some of my going beyond these simplest models, you also have the type 2 seesaw, which is one of the three canonical seesaw scenarios. I also think it's one of the reasons why I think it's useful to talk about this one in particular is that, again, it's sometimes said that, you know, neutrino masses are evidence for right-handed neutrinos, and that's not precise. The type 2 seesaw is a great example of that, in that you can generate neutrino masses without hypothesizing right-handed neutrinos. So this is what we mean when we say that neutrino masses don't need right-handed neutrinos. You can generate them by hypothesizing alternative particles, like scalars that have standard model quantum numbers and lepton number, and then you're able to build it up a multiplet. And this neutral fellow acquires a vacuum expectation value after electroweak symmetry breaking. And so this tiny, you know, sub-GeV, EV scale VEV is what's going to generate neutrino masses through this dimension four operator. So you have the Lagrangian, which is you take the lepton doublet, another lepton doublet, and the scalar, and then after a little SU2 algebra, you're able to generate left-handed Majorana masses. And what's kind of cool about models like a type 2 seesaw or variants on that is that because you don't have right-handed neutrinos, you have fewer mixing parameters. You have fewer Yukawa couplings. You still have Yukawa couplings, you just have fewer of them. And you have so few Yukawa couplings that you're able to really relate, instead of ratios of Yukawa couplings are equal to elements of the PM-S matrix, individual Yukawa couplings are equal to elements of the PM-S matrix. So this would be, say, the diagonal mass matrix for the neutrinos. So, you know, elements 1, 2, 3, the PM-S matrix, and that's the Yukawas. And therefore, when you start taking, if you were to discover these sort of particles, these doubly or singly charged scalars, and then start taking the ratios of their branching rates to leptons, you start seeing oscillation parameters and oscillation features being imprinted and showing up in the into the decay ratios. And here is what I'm showing are just the branching fractions as a function of lightest neutrino masses. And you can just sort of see the oscillation behavior, the oscillation parameters, you know, reminiscent of here, normal ordering versus inverse ordering, in these decay rates, because it's encapsulated by what's already been measured at oscillation experiments. So this is a great example of the complementarity between collider experiments and oscillation experiments, where the oscillation parameters measured at neutrino experiments are being fed as inputs for collider predictions. And again, some of the newer stuff, or at least past couple years for the snow mass studies and this round of strategy updates, is that we have predictions, for collider rates as a function of mass. And what's important to know is that these scalars, you know, they have gauge couplings, and so the predictions are fixed. We know exactly, you know, what their cross sections are at your favorite accuracy in QCD once you fix the mass. What we don't know is are the branching rates and the total width. So that's the ambiguity. So yeah, you still do the searches, but we've put all of our tools online, so you could just download your favorite UFO and try to do studies for say FCCEE. And there's like the heavy neutrinos, exotically charged scalars can have several projection mechanisms: gluon fusion, vector boson scattering, Drell-Yan, gamma, and of course we have our reach plots. Going beyond the traditional tree levels, some of the newer stuff is also trying to expand into the loop level models. Rebecca or Julio, how am I on time? I think I have like what, like 2 minutes left?
We are more or less 1 minute left, but
1 minute.
we are
Okay.
doing good. Yeah,
Okay, well, I'm just about done anyway. So what I want to say is that the Zeebo model is again another example in which you're able to generate neutrino masses without hypothesizing right-headed neutrinos, and you just do this by introducing enough scalars with SU2 hypercharge quantum numbers. Actually, they're in this case SU2 singlets, but you give them hypercharge, and you assign them lepton numbers, and you're able to generate neutrino masses radiatively. And it's this coupling between the different scalars that violates that breaks lepton number and induces non-zero neutrino masses. And again, because there are just fewer parameters, the Yukawa couplings can be written explicitly and exactly in terms of the oscillation parameters. And you get this, again, this sort of behavior in which the oscillation parameters are imprinted on branching rates. I'll just conclude by just saying you have cross sections as a function of mass, and actually it's kind of cool that it was only back in at the end of 2022 and beginning of 2023 that Atlas had the first constraint. This is a reinterpretation of the results, but this was the first test of this first direct search for Zeebo scalars at any high energy facility. So this is relatively new, and there are of course search sensitivities up to several TeV at 100 TeV. That was just a snapshot. I didn't talk about left-right symmetric model. I didn't talk about B minus L or scotogenic models. I didn't talk about NuSnF or leptoquarks. I didn't even talk about type 3 seesaws. I didn't cover a lot. I actually said a little. But unambiguously, we know that neutrinos have non-zero masses. Something must exist. What it is, we don't know. But until we have concrete guidance on how to proceed, I think it's important that we err on the side of caution, explore broadly, and build up this large portfolio, physical portfolio for the future collider scenarios. So yeah, that's all I have.
Thank you very much, Richard. This actually was quite interesting, and we don't get to think about high energy super often in here. So I think it's kind of nice to have this option as well. So I don't know if anybody has any comments or questions for Richard. We're a little bit delayed, so maybe that is not too bad. But I wanted to check with you. Do you know if has anybody contacted you? Do you have any idea if this kind of proposal things will be already included in our study report, the one that we are preparing for the strategy?
As far as I know, no. That's why
Yeah.
I'm kind of reaching out, because it's been kind of fast moving. It's been much faster than the previous Nomads. I think Tevang Yu was a point person, but actually, I haven't heard much from him. So I think it would be useful to try to incorporate these numbers. There's something I think we missed the deadline for doing it through the French community. I thought I saw Eric and a couple other people from the French community who might be able to comment. Is it too late for contributions for the French input? Like Suzanne, would you know?
In a first approximation, yes, I think
Yeah, I thought
also
so.
Jeremy maybe could comment, but we had a deadline that was actually pushed back, but it was I believe it was November 18th or 16th to have the two page, I mean it's the same, it was the same deal, have a two page summary of contributions, but maybe offline I can, or I don't know if Jeremy, are you still connected? You can, I can go on the page and see if there's a possibility to slip in things still.
Yeah, because Ben, well, yeah, continue.
Yeah, sorry, the The submission to the page is probably still possible. You need to
Ah.
give a try and see if it goes through. I think we left it open a bit more than the deadline.
Okay.
Also, we are wrapping up a bit the contents, but for sure it will be considered for March. We have an intermediate meeting in January. That's why we had this deadline a couple of weeks
Yeah,
ago.
it's the JUSUR meeting. The
Yeah,
reason why I mentioned
20th
the
and
French,
21st.
yeah, the reason why I mentioned the French is that one, I already have some stuff with Benjamin Fuchs, who also
Yes.
worked on some of this stuff, but
Yeah,
also
okay, yeah.
possibly combining forces with Anna at the team Clermont, because we just have so many plots that it'd be nice to just do something.
Richard, sorry, I need to leave for another meeting. I guess you are in the list of the FCCHH meetings, and you know that there is one next week. So maybe that's the place where you want to present and talk to Michelangelo and the people taking care of the FCCHH.
Okay.
There is also, we are finalizing the agenda for January, and there will be an FCCHH session as well.
Well,
And
yeah, it's also the kind of the travel schedule to CERN. I have a young kid, and
you don't have to necessarily travel. I mean, I'm just saying you're trying to get the information through. I'm just saying that there is a meeting for the FCCHH, and there is a community that is working, because we are gonna have contributions in the document about that. So as much as things are finalized, as the Jeremy and Suzanne said, there are still, things are not totally written in stone, because there is still, few time, some time. But the best, if you want, since it's FCC, is to go through the people that are doing the FCCHH material in general, if you
Okay.
want. Trying to say. So there was an email yesterday. I haven't checked when is the meeting exactly. But maybe you want to check and see if you can slip in a 5 minutes
Yeah,
presentation.
maybe I missed that because I'm traveling this week. So maybe I'll take a look at that. Thanks for pointing that out, Patricia. I appreciate it. I must have missed that.
I mean, Patricia, if you could share it with us also, because I don't have that meeting, so anyway.
Yeah, it's another mailing list where people needs to be, so maybe you
Yeah,
just
it will be good to know about it, because I mean, at this point, I think it's fine. We don't have super many things, but this is it will be nice to keep an eye on all these kind of studies like this one to follow them up, because I think it's kind of a cool thing to have. Jeremy, are you adding up on something now?
Yeah, just to mention the French thing is a national effort. And it doesn't supersede the FCC8H path. So I would recommend you go there first, and we'd be happy to receive your contribution to the French national effort. But it doesn't. I mean, it has to go through the FCC path for sure, in my opinion.
Okay. Thank you, Jeremy. And thanks to both Sarah and Patricia for the mailing list. I certainly was not in it, so I just sign up now. All right, cool. So I think, and I'm afraid we don't have time for anything else. So Richard, you can go. You're free. Thank you so much for this update. We will keep in touch with you.
Yeah,
I will send
thank
you an
you.
email with Tevon also, so he can also keep an eye on that. And now we move on to Mina about the search for action-like particles decaying into a pair of gluons. Are you ready?
Hi. Yes, hi everyone. Just let me share the screen. Okay, hi. I think all slides are visible.
They
Okay,
are.
hi everyone. Okay. So today I will give update on search for action-like particle decaying into a pair of gluons. So action-like particle is a potential candidate that can help to understand strong CP problem, dark matter, and beyond standard model physics. So currently we are studying the ALP sensitivity at FCC electron positron collider at the center of mass energy 91 GeV, and luminosity currently we used 150 Ottobon inverse. and we used the available latest fast simulation FCC card. So the signal process include electron positron, track to form a gamma plus excitation, and then excitation decaying further into digluons. And we have considered branching ratio of excitation going to digluon equal to 100% based on ALP linear model. More detail can be found in this paper. And here is the Feynman diagram. On the left hand side is for signal, and on the right hand side for background, gamma and di gamma plus jets. And for generation, we have generated signal and background process using NetGraph and PTIT used for quantum showering and hadronization. And currently, we used IDEA fast simulation Dolphin's card. And analysis selection and plotting are done with the MAD analysis framework. So coming to the next slide. So it is a little bit about excitation theory. So this Lagrangian equation here shown represent how excitation interact with the standard order particle after a spontaneous symmetry breaking. And there is a relation between coupling before and after the SSP. So CGG, CBB, CWW, and C5 represent coupling of ALP2, SU3 gluons, SU2LV gauge boson field, and U1 hypercharge gauge boson field and Higgs field before SSP. And then coupling denoted by CA gamma gamma represent coupling of excitation to gluon gamma gamma, and CA gamma G represent coupling of excitation to gamma G after the SSB. And there is a relation between CA gamma gamma and equal to CBB cos square theta plus CWW sin square theta divided by the new physics scale, and also for coupling of excitation gamma G coupling that is equal to 2 cos theta sin theta CWW minus CBB divided by the new physics scale. And so for ALP linear model, excitation going to digluon. So important parameter are CGG, CWW, CBB, C5, and excitation mass. So coming to the next slide. So currently we have applied some selection to select benchmark point. So we have considered that excitation must decay within the tracker volume while keeping a signal cross section at least 10% of total background. And we have considered branching ratio of excitation going to gluon 100%. So fly distance can be calculated using the beta gamma C tau formula, where tau is equal to H crossover decay width, and decay width and beta gamma can be calculated using this formula. So fly distance depend on the mass of excitation and CGG. And the constraint on CGG is that ratio of decay width or mass of excitation must be less than 1% to avoid unphysical large decay width of excitation going to gamma gamma. Then from these two conditions, we can select CGG. Then we have to select CW and CBBB. So for this, we have to make sure that excitation going to gamma gamma not happen in our channel. So for this, we have to make coupling of excitation to gamma gamma equal to 0. And from that, we can get this relation that we have to take CBB equal to minus 0.3 CWW. And the second constraint on the CW and CBB is coming from the decay width of G going to excitation plus gamma, and it must be less than 2.3 e raised to power minus 3 GV. That is coming from the total G decay width uncertainties. And the third constraint on the CW and CBB is that we have to consider signal cross section greater than 10% of total background cross section. And the total background cross section is to 200-250 picobound. So coming to next slide. So here is the result for benchmark point selection. On the left hand side, the flight distance is shown as a function of excitation mass on x-axis and CGG over FA on the y-axis. And so here the black curve represent flight distance for 0.1 centimeter, green one is for 1 centimeter, and blue one is for 50 centimeter. So initially we can select CGG from here. Then on the right-hand side, there is a constraint for the upper limit of CGG, that ratio of decay width over gamma, it must be less than 1%. So we can, from this constraint, we had to take CGG below this curve. So this is done, this is all for CGG. Then selection for CWW is the bottom plot shown for the cross section, and x-axis is represent edge joint mass, y-axis represent CWW over FA, and here the black curve represent cross section equal to 20 picobound. So we have to take above this curve, and the upper limit on CCW is coming from the GDK width. So this is the coupling value we have to take for CWW, and for CBB it's just a minus 0.3 into the CWW. So coming to next slide. So here is the initial result for some benchmark points. So we used CGG equal to 0.2, CW 0.9, CBV minus 0.7, CFI equal to 0, and for different mass of egg giant like 20, 30, 40 GV, and FA scale is used 1 TV, and total number of events are generated 1 million. So final, our final selection is required that we have at least 1 gamma and at least 2 jets in the final state. So initially, gamma required have PT greater than 50 GV, and jets are clean against gamma using the delta R condition greater than 0.5. So then rho events are normalized with the luminosity into cross-section divided by the total number of generated events. Then sensitivity is calculating using the ratio of number of signal event divided by the sum of signal event plus background and square root of that. And on the left-hand side plot, the number of jets are shown after at least 1 gamma selection. And we can clearly see that it's a peak around 2 jets. And here the blue color represent for mass 20, violet color represent for 30 GV, and black one for 40 GV. And on the right-hand side, digest mass are shown after at least 1 gamma plus at least 2 jets. And that must represent egg giant mass. And here we can see that for 20, it's around 20, for 30, and 40 GV. And below is the table in which sensitivity and selection efficiency is shown. So the first column represents different TMC sample, and last row represents the background sample, that is gamma plus digests. And the second column shows cross-section corresponding to MC sample. And the third is represent row number of event, plus uncertainties. And then fourth column represents event after normalization. And then fifth column represents selection efficiency. And the last represents sensitivity. So the difference between these two sections of the table is that first in the blue color, where gamma PT cut is taken 50 GV on the right, and in the red color, PT cut is 20 GV. So so if you use 20 GV, that selection sensitivity is increased, and background contribution reduced from 35 to 22%. Coming to next slide. So future plan is to is that MELT analysis framework is already set up for sensitive analysis, but we have to further optimize event selection for different mass and benchmark point, and to complete the analysis for rest of benchmark points. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Mina. That was a very interesting talk, actually, with a lot of information. It looks like a kind of cool analysis. I see that Juliet has the hand raised, so please, Juliet, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Mina. This is showing really nice progress. I just had a simple question, really. Well, maybe two very quick questions. Why are you using MAD analysis and not FCC analysis for the analysis part?
Our first target is to publish the FINO paper. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, great. And then just a simple one on the previous slide. For the right plot where you have the mass, I can hardly see the background in the plot. So maybe consider the y-axis changing it to log scale, depending on how your optimization goes, if this version of the plot sort of sticks around.
Yeah, okay. I have a log plot, but I didn't put here. So Okay.
No problem.
Yeah, next time. Yeah.
This was also my
Thanks.
comment, actually, in that plot, because I was having it hard to see the background. So I think we agree. Okay. Thank you, Juliet. So we have Suzanne also with a comment or question. Go ahead.
Yes, thanks a lot, Mina. So I just had a question about, okay, you obviously just wanted to start by choosing a benchmark point, but on slide 4, so this requirement of the signal cross section being bigger than 10% of the total background section, was this just to assure that you would be able to see signal events? I mean, you just kind of like qualitatively picked that threshold, or was there something else behind?
I think yes, but we can check sensitivity for the low cross section also. Then we can decide later which actual cross section values we have to select for benchmark point selection.
Okay, I realized this was just a first iteration to try to get from beginning to end, so that it's really good. I just wanted to see what was behind it. So thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Very good. Okay, so I think time is actually at the essence. So thank you so much, Mina. Just keep us posted with anything that you keep progressing with. The plan sounds good to me, at least, and we're looking forward to see how this goes.
Thank you.
And now I hand over to Juliet to continue the chairing of this meeting.
Thanks. Okay, so next in principle, we have Emanuele, but I know that Emre and Anna Paola need to leave by 2:30, I believe. Is it okay, Anna Paola, for example, if we go with Emanuele following the schedule, or should we bump you up?
I think it's fine.
Okay. Emanuele.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello? Okay, let me share my screen. Okay. All right. All right. Okay. Nope. Okay. Sorry. Okay, so good afternoon, everyone. Today I will give you some update about this work that was previously introduced by my supervisor, Vasiliki, who is also connected. So this is about the use of two particle angular correlations to investigate new physics at future plus and minus collider. So our previous work was performed for ILC, and now we are trying to extend for FCCEE. So first of all, what do I mean by two particle angular correlations? These observable are powerful method to study investigate the underlying mechanism of particle production in high energy collisions, and they are also used to uncover possible collective effects resulting from the high particle densities. Once we define the difference in rapidity and the azimuthal angle of two final state particles, we can define the two particle angular correlation function, which is given by the ratio of the density of particle pairs produced within the same event and thus produced in different events. So these observables have been largely studied in proton-proton, proton-lead, lead-lead collisions, C plus C minus. And what we can notice here is the appearance of a ridge in all of them. And in general, for instance, for lead-lead collisions, the reason of this ridge is considered to be given by a quark-gluon plasma effect. So our goal here is to study two angular particle correlation and to consider them it as a tool for investigating new physics. What do I mean by new physics? So we consider the hidden valley scenario, in which by hidden valley refer to a wide class of models in which the standard model gauge group is extended by a new group, under which we have a new class of particles called phi particles, which are natural under the standard model particles, under the standard model gauge group. And then we have a communicator, which is charged under both groups here. The specific hidden valley model we consider is a QCD-like scenario, in which our communicator is denoted by FV, which is has to be pre-produced, which is to be considered as the mirror partner of standard model charged leptons and quarks. And this is supposed to decay promptly into what? Into visible particles and the so-called p quarks, and then we have the hadronization. This is the way on the left, the way to produce such particles in proton-proton collision, but we are interested in E plus E minus collisions as they provide a much cleaner environment. In particular, as in nature, we consider the perturbation in conventional QCD cascade and final hadronization. In particular, we investigate if there is any anomaly in angular correlations. So this analysis is performed at detector level. We consider the thrust axis. Then the tool, the tools employed are PTI-8 for a Monte Carlo Heaven generator. Then fast for fast detector simulation, we use SGV-30 that was previously used for IRC studies. And then for the analysis, we consider IRC soft and root. We consider a center of mass energy of 240. As a signal, we consider the pair production of the so-called GV, which is our communicator, which decays in what in the into a D quark and V quarks and gluons. And the main contribution is for the background is given by QQ bar production in association with initial state radiation. And WW, which decays in to four quarks. As you can see here from this table, we have the standard model background, which gives a contribution which is two or up to two order magnitudes bigger than our hidden valley signal. So we need to apply some cuts in order to reduce as much background as possible. So here, we applied some changes in the ILD geometry by adapting it for FCCEE. So here you can see the difference between ILD at ILC and ILD at FCC, and here are listed the main changes. And as you can see, there is a reduction of the forward region area available, which will affect somehow our analysis. Let's see how. So here we have, in our case, the diving jet invariant mass distribution for a standard model from some hidden valley signal, which in the case in which no cuts are still applied. And as you can see here, the around the Z peak, there is a large overlap between standard model signal between the standard model background and our signal. So we need to act there a bit. So we tried by applying some cuts used for ILC, which are no secondary vertices and the number of neutral particle offload objects to be less than 22 and the charged ones less than 50 and we 15, and we applied some cuts on the emission angle of the photon from initial state radiation and its energy, and then a cut on diejet invariant mass, and also a cut on the energy associated with the leading jet. So these cuts turned out to be not as effective as at ILC, and this is due to the limited coverage in the forward region, which makes the ISR photon detection less efficient. So for FCC, we need reoptimization, and we are still working on that. Here I can show you some plots and the difference between ILC and FCC in terms of the jet invariant mass jet. So here, the jet invariant mass. So here you have for in red what we have for what we had for ILC, in which we have a peak at 215 with back jet, and here we have a large contribution for FCC from radiative returns, as we consider some ISR photons to escape undetected. And here you have an intermediate region. So by applying these cuts the previous mentioned cuts for LDFCC, we had a ratio signal over background equal to 1, and it needs to be reoptimized, and we need a refinement. But what we can see that regardless that we still observe something in the angular correlations observable, and still they turn out to be a powerful tool. As you can see here in the left, you have the standard model distribution. Here you have pure hidden valley, with in which we considered just as benchmark dB mass of 120 GV and V quarks mass of 10 GV. So if we consider the yield function, which is obtained by integrating the angular correlation functions into a delta y range, and we focus on the delta y range, which is from minus 1.6 and to 1.6, what we observe here is this bump that was also for ILC. And so, which is, as you can see here, red, which is absent for the case of our standard model. And here you have very preliminary sensitivity, in which we consider both a contribution from the statistics, statistical and the systematic uncertainties, and still we found some good sensitivity here. So this is to be taken, since it's very preliminary work, we need to refine cuts and investigate better, but so far it still looks promising. And so this brings to my conclusions. So the analysis of the long range angular particle correlation can provide insights into the initial state of the matter. And studying the sub-observable could be useful to uncover the existence of new physics. And I want to remark, this is to be considered complementary to conventional searches. And right now, we are working for FCCE in order to study sub-observable. And we are trying to reoptimizing that. So thank you so much. And so I hope I'm in time. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Just a little late, but I didn't share very
sorry.
Well.
Sorry. I tried to, yeah.
No worries.
I'm sorry.
Thank you. This is very nice progress. So I see a question from Emre.
Mm-hmm. Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah.
I just have a really quick question. First of all, thank you so much for the talk. I was just wondering, in slide 10, there is around 240 GeV.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Similar thing
Here you mean? Or
the red signal. We had a mm-hmm. very similar signature in our analyses, and we were not able to quite understand why that peak appears around 240 GeV. Would you maybe have an explanation for that?
So this is well, what I'd say this is due to the back-to-back reconstructed jets, but yeah, not really. Yeah, we don't actually, because we are considering our region, we are focusing on our signal region. So
mm-hmm. yeah, I see.
Actually, yeah. We have, but yeah, maybe it's due to back-to-back jets that can be your... Yeah,
I have to admit it wasn't relieving to see that you also have that peak, because mm-hmm. I was thinking maybe we did something wrong in our analysis, or but seeing no, this peak appear also, yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. So yeah. I guess it's cucumber production. Here, there's the main contribution from ISAR. Still to be investigated. It's very, as I said, it's very, very preliminary study. We just started to work on that, so this is just to be taken as preliminary. So hopefully we will give some progresses with refinement on cats soon and some more consistent results.
Okay, other questions? Okay, in the interest of time, thanks a lot, Emanuele, and we move on to the
sorry
next
for
one.
Being a bit late.
No,
sorry.
No, don't worry. Okay. We move on directly to Emery.
I just want to make sure you can hear me well because I have really bad headphones. I hope you can hear me well.
For the most part, yeah. For half a second, it seemed a little low,
yeah.
But then you came back. So
sorry.
I think it's fine.
Can you
okay.
see the slide?
Yes. They're not absolutely full screen yet, but I think they're good enough that if you needed to go like this, there they are, full screen. Go
perfect.
Ahead,
thank
please.
You. Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to talk about this. So basically, I would like to talk to you about my master's thesis, who is supervised by Anna Paola, who is also attending today's workshop. Basically, I would like to talk to you about a model that we built that can be tested in FCCEE and the selections that we applied, the analysis that we made. But to quickly give you an overview of what is necessary in our model is, I prepared this short slide about hidden bodies. It's basically a framework that is introduced to explain behavior of supposed particles beyond standard model. The main reason why we have hidden bodies is basically to detect or to see if long-lived particles really exist. And apart from long-lived particles, as was mentioned in the previous presentations, it gives us insights into unexplored phenomena such as dark matter and exotic Higgs decays, latter being the focus of our project, which I would like to talk to you about. And especially, just to give you a quick reason why we're interested in Higgs processes is because FCCEE Higgs factory mode is basically optimized for ZH production, which maximizes Higgs boson production rates, which I would like to show you in the next slide here. You can see the cross sections of different standard model processes involving Higgs, and you can see in the second plot on the right clearly that the cross section for ZH pole is maximized around the energies FCCEE will be operating. So the ZH is the dominant background involved compared to the dark signals that we are interested in, or semi-visible jets, which I will explain later in a bit. And we are again interested in these processes specifically because we can discover and learn more about exotic Higgs decays, such as involved or mentioned in BSM physics, or which will be the focus of the talk today. We can learn more about dark showers. So just to give you a quick overview of our model, we are basically interested in also a strongly confined dark sector, where we introduce for the moment two flavor of dark quarks and a U3 symmetry. Apart from dark quarks and dark gluons, we also introduce a dark photon, which helps us detect the particles that decay into standard model, on top of introducing an axion-like particle, which also allows some of the dark mesons to decay into standard model particles. And how do we access this hidden sector? Well, we introduce a Higgs portal. So our production mechanism involves Higgs, which I will show you here in this slide. So in an electron-positron collider like FCCEE, we are able to produce ZH, where in our model, we assumed Z to decay into standard model leptons and Higgs to couple to the dark quarks that we introduced. And these dark quarks then later hadronized to the dark mesons in our theory, which we assume to be dark pions. These are vector stable, and we assumed them to be to constitute the invisible sector. We assumed the rho zero to decay into steric model leptons and quarks, the decay mechanism of which I will explain later. And we also assumed eta prime to decay into steric model photons. And all the other particles in the dark sector, we assumed, or not particles, but mesons, we assumed them to be the sector stable, which might be good candidates for dark matter. So how does this coupling actually work? We assume the Higgs to couple to dark quarks via a Yukawa-like coupling. Here we make the assumption that dark quarks are spin zero to make sure the Lagrangian is gauge invariant. And here we introduce, or we make use of, two parameters to change the invisible fraction in our theory. These are parameters that are provided within the PTA. For example, P eta is like the probability factor of eta prime meson produced over dark pions, which we assume to be stable. And P rho is the fraction of dark vector mesons, being rho zero and rho plus minus, to the pseudoscalar mesons, being pions and eta prime in our theory. So what kind of signature do we expect actually? We expect a signature where the Higgs basically produces two jets, and these jets we specify them as semi-visible jets, because some of the particles that are mentioned here, they decay into steric model, but some of them don't, and they constitute the invisible fraction. That's why the name semi-visible jets. And the Z that is produced in the collision, in the electron positron collision, it then produces dileptons like muons, as represented in this plot, in this drawing. So just to give you an idea of how do these particles that we assume to decay into steric model decay into steric model, here you can see that we introduce a dark photon to make sure we have a coupling between dark quarks and steric model fermions. And this is basically the mechanism that is necessary to make sure we have rho zero decaying into steric model quarks and steric model leptons. And here you can see the mechanism we introduced for making sure eta prime couples to steric model photons. So this part where we have the axion-like particle and vector-like leptons, this basically effectively disappears in our calculations. So effectively, the decay width gamma is given by this formula that only depends on the mass of the eta prime and this decay constant f eta prime. Here you can see two plots representing branching fractions for dark rho meson, which use two different approaches. So for theoretical considerations, it was not possible to make the same predictions as was possible with higher values of lambda in the lower mass, in the lower value regime for lambda. So we used the dark cast framework to compute the branching fractions. As you can see here, we dominantly have electrons and muons for lower lambda confinement scale. And here on this plot, you can see the branchings into other possible steric model leptons and quarks. And these plots, I have to mention, are for some specific choice of couplings in our theory, which can be modified anytime, depending on what we want to, what benchmark points we want to have. And here you can see the average fractions represented in dependence of the confinement scale lambda. So basically, we consider both of our particles, rho zero and eta prime, which decay into steric model, and we try to compute what kind of average fractions we would expect in our signature by making the assumption that P eta, which is the probability factor of eta being produced over pions, setting it to 0.25, and P rho, the probability vector, the fraction of rho mesons, vector mesons to pseudoscalar mesons, setting it to 0.75. And these are the results. Again, for the lower confinement scales, we had to use a different approach than higher confinement scales. So that is why the plots seem different from each other. Now to talk about the simulation. So we used PTA8 Delphi's to be more specific, K for HEP, to create our samples. And we use fast simulation within the FCC software framework. And we also made use of the IDEA detector card, where we introduced invisible particles on top of neutrinos. We modified the detector card to make sure that invisible particles are not included in the jets, in the jet clustering. Then we analyze our samples. So we basically created 45 benchmark points in the parameter space of P eta, P rho, and lambda, where these two parameters constitute the invisible fraction. And we also made sure that for our model, we set m pi over lambda to 2, and we made sure that the rho mass obeys this lattice QCD result. And again, to vary invisible fraction, we just varied these two parameters. So here you can see what backgrounds we use in our analysis. So why are these backgrounds necessary in the first place? These are necessary because we expect similar signatures in our signal that are similar signatures to standard model processes like ZZ, ZMU, mu, H, and WW. And we have to consider these to make sure that we can differentiate our signal to those backgrounds. And the selections we applied are basically listed here. So we wanted to make sure we choose muons with this energy and this pseudo-rapidity. And the following selections are also made to make sure that in this process here, I just shown you that we are able to select events where Z decays into mu mu, and we consider the SVJs from the Higgs in our model. So why are we interested in jet mass? Before I show you some plots, I want to explain to you why this is relevant. So the jet mass basically gives us direct information about the Higgs boson decay products, especially in standard model processes where we have hadronic decays like HBB, but also in our case where we assume Higgs to couple to dark sectors, so for dark showers basically. And for to make sure we reject the background, here we assume a recoil mass for here we consider recoil mass for background rejection because it's more suited for rejecting backgrounds and isolating events like ZH, but it does not directly contribute to reconstructing the Higgs properties. So here I would like to show you some plots with jet mass. Basically, here we have our signal and some specific choice of our invisible, which is given by these two parameters. So depending on the choice of these and variance of the other parameter, we get the following results. So here you can see, for example, for lambda equals to 10, in the leading jet mass plot, we are able to recognize the mass of the rho in this peak around that. Whereas also for lambda equals 1 and lambda equals 2, we are, even though it's not that distinct, we are still able to recognize the peaks. For example, for lambda equals 2, we have the peak around 7, 6 GeV. For lambda equals 1, we have the peak around 3 GeV, even though it's not that well recognizable. Here in this plot, you can see how the leading jet mass or the peak or this peak around the leading jet mass for lambda 10 changes with respect to the invisible fraction. So if we make the invisible fraction higher, then if we decrease the invisible fraction, we see an increase in the number of events around this peak. So this also reflects how our invisible is related to the number of events around this peak. And here you can see there is almost no difference for this choice of parameter, which we have to check specifically what this P eta describes. This plot is just to show you that we expect a peak around here as well for this choice of lambda. On top of that, we also did some sensitivity analyses. So here in these four plots, you can see for different choices of parameters that constitute the invisible fraction, what kind of sensitivities we expect. So here, if we scan over lambda, these are basically the plots that we would expect. So in the lower confinement confinement scale regime, we seem to be more sensitive than in the higher towards detecting these signals. Another thing that we analyzed was jet clustering algorithm. So basically, just to give you a quick summary of the algorithms that we tried to analyze, we have the KT-Durham exclusive algorithm, which is defined by this.
Where to publicity?
Sorry.
Oops.
So we have this definition of the metric in this jet clustering algorithm, and it's commonly used in E plus E minus colliders for resolving jets in low PT environments. Another algorithm that we have, just to quickly remind you, is the anti-KT algorithm, which is defined by this metric. And what we tried to do in our studies is to analyze the difference of these algorithms in recognizing the peak that I just showed you. So what we did is we, first of all, for these three colors, green, black, and blue, we have the anti-KT algorithm, where we changed R and P, which are specified parameters in the detector card. We can see, for example, here in this plot, that KT-Durham seems to be better in constructing the diejet invariant mass for the standard model process that QQ. Also here, you can see that if we zoom in, KT-Durham seems to have a sharper peak around the mass of stat for the standard model process. On the other hand, if we have a look at our signal, we see that the jet clustering algorithm that is recommended for these processes, which is KT-Durham, standardly, it does not reconstruct the mass peak that we expect around 35 GeV. But anti-KT does a much better job in constructing this peak compared to KT-Durham. So this is basically the takeaway message of of our analysis of jet clustering. And this would conclude my presentation. Thank you so much for your attention.
Great, thanks a lot. Also showing lots of nice progress. Questions? I think I would have one or two. Perhaps a naive one. The sensitivity plots that you used, is this using combine or some S over square root of S plus B?
I
How is
believe
the
so.
sensitivity? Wait,
I
which
believe
one?
it uses I believe it uses the first one.
Combine. Okay, cool.
But I have to check to give you a clear response. So I'm
Yes, it is using combine, just
Okay,
to
cool. Well,
clarify.
especially for the Atlas colleagues, that would be a good thing to note on the slide for the future. Okay, no problem. This is interesting. My other comment was the thing you mentioned on slide 12, sort of offhand, and it's not written on the slide, was that you made sure to modify the idea card such that
Yes.
invisible, sorry.
Exactly. This is not on the slides now that I realized. So what we wanted to do is we wanted to exclude invisible particles from the jets because this was causing some problems in our in further analysis. And all the results that I've just shown you, they consider this fact that these invisible particles are not considered within jet clustering.
Okay, I think this is an actually important point to note, and in future documentation, I suggest you write this quite clearly,
Yes, thank you
because
so
this is a
much.
big change with respect to what everyone else is doing. It's I to me it seems totally fair, but one should note it.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Other comments or questions? Okay, I'm not hearing any. Thanks a lot, Anne-Marie.
Thank you.
We move on to the last talk today. It's on HNLs with Folsom. I think Jeremy will talk and show Gail's slides, if I have understood correctly. Right, because she's sick and she lost her voice. Yes.
Yes, exactly. She lost her voice, but still she's connected. So if I'm saying something totally stupid, Gael, please correct on the chat.
We'll watch
I
the
will
chat.
try to do as a good talk as she would have done. Let me go to full screen, maybe. Okay. Can you see it?
I mean, when it went to full screen, it also went to black. I mean,
Okay.
yeah.
It's the wrong page again. Oh, maybe I forget full screen and I assume that it's good enough like this.
It was big enough, I think.
Yeah. Okay. So this is an update of the HNL studies done by Gael, indeed, based on CLD full simulation. So I will go a bit quick through the introductions that we presented a few times here already. But again, the idea is to have a full simulation so we can compare with FastSim and see the impact and see also where we have to improve the full sim to better match what could be the expected performances. We try to do so to reproduce the analysis or fraction of it of the fast simulation that has been already published. Yeah, you can find all the references to the model and so on there. This is not the latest in geometry of CLD, but for what we want to test, it's by far good enough. As a reminder, we faced issues with the tracking reconstruction in CLD with this so-called conformal tracking, in the which with the new geometry was not matching what was expected for the performances of displaced vertex compared to the CLD paper. So Gael identified that the issue was coming to a parameter of the pattern recognition that has to be adapted to match the new geometry. So it's improved quite significantly if you I don't go into the technical details, but if you look at the top and bottom plots, you see that the reconstruction is getting much closer to the generation. This is the displacement, the vertex decay length, if you want. Jen and Rico, and you see that we improve quite significantly the reconstruction. Also, it's not 100% actually, so might be some further optimization might be required. Along this line, we also realized that the electron reconstructions, once you get the track, the electron reconstruction is also not 100%. It's so on the right side, you see an illustration of this. The top is the electrode reconstruction distribution, and on the bottom is the track reconstruction distribution with HNL signal. This has been spotted to be related to the particle flow reconstruction. I think some experts are working on those. For non-displaced electrons, it's kind of okay. Also, there are some loss of efficiency observed. But when we go for high displacement, really the efficiency is dropping, and we have to deal with that in the analysis. I will come back to this later. Moving on with the tracking efficiency estimations. This is tracking efficiency and fake rate for Z into Toto and Zoom into EE. And as expected, the efficiency is very high and the fake rate is very low, which is behaving as it should be. Then if you look at this is for the background, then and if you look at the signals, so of course the picture is a bit different. If you get a benchmark point that doesn't lead to huge displacement, you get a lower efficiency, but still quite high. In fact, this is as a function of PT and theta. But when you look at the benchmark points where the displacement start to be more pronounced, the efficiency is significantly impacted. So this is the efficiency as function of the position of the generated vertex, so the decadence with respect to the origin, the PT and the theta distribution. So all this to say that in full simulation, in fast simulation, sorry, I think we take 100% efficiency everywhere, which might be too optimistic. Now it's true also that on the full sim part, we have to improve this to get closer to the 100% efficiency. But for the time being, this is how it is. And how does this propagate to the reconstruction of the vertex? This is a comparison between the Gen vertex position and Rico vertex position. And you see that we can, for low displacement, there is basically no real issue. But for high displacement, it's impacting, and also okay, we can still reconstruct up to something like 60 centimeters within the detector. So once we have this, how do we proceed? Of course, the electron thing we is something that we have to deal with. So for benchmark that leads to not too large displacement, we'll probably leave with the electrons. But for large displacement, we have to look at the tracks, see if they are isolated from other tracks around, and see if it match any calorimeter a cluster. And this is what we plan to do, some sort of low level electron reconstruction, so we can move on with the analysis. You will see it has a severe impact on the signal selection. So far, the event selection that we are testing, there is a minimum pt cut on the electron. And we ask for two electrons with the opposite charge and not compatible with the Z boson mass, and a minimum missing transverse energy cut. And of course, all this is not optimized yet. There is room for improvement a lot. Still, it gives a good idea of what it could be. Then we reconstruct the vertex, and ideally, if we can have a background under control, this vertex decay length might be a good observable to base the extraction of the signal to. So this is the cut flow table that has been prepared by Gael again. This is corresponding to a cross section from the fast simulation paper that would multiply by a huge factor. Why? Just to see something on the slide, on the plots, actually. Otherwise, you don't see the signal a lot. And even with that, you will see it's difficult to extract the signal, I think. HNL3050 is kind of where we have the largest displacement, and you see just asking two electrons is reducing quite significantly the signal itself, illustrating the impact of this bad electron reconstruction. And for a smaller displacement, it's kind of okay. This is the background. I will not go through all the numbers, but you see that indeed we might have some Monte Carlo issues there in terms of statistics. Because once you ask for a little bit of displacement, the background is strictly zero, while it's probably not the case. So far, we produce our own samples because it's full simulation, and we with somewhat a small statistics, something like 50,000, if I recall properly. We might have to increase this a lot. Some stack plots illustrating a bit the impact of the selections on some distributions, the pt of the leptons, theta of the leptons, the dileptons invariant mass, the missing energy, transverse energy, and the decay length. Here, clearly, you see that we need more statistics on the Monte Carlo, and might not be easy to deal with that, in fact. Yes. I hope I'm not taking too much time. The conclusion is we made some progresses on the reconstruction part. I think we're getting to a point where we can start really to implement the analysis code that has been done. It's made on FCC analysis using the official tools, and I think we are ready to move on there. The basic bricks are there. Now we need to improve the electron reconstruction for displacement. Optimize a bit to try to get back a bit of more efficiency, define more discriminating variables, and a systematics, and extract the signal with a statistical tool. So the analysis work is actually starting. So
great. Thanks so much, Jeremy and Gail. Questions? I have maybe a basic one on slide 8. I worry I missed something fundamental. How can you have one value for max cell angle for signal and another value for background?
We cannot, of course. I think it's just Monte Carlo generation that has been one way or the other. Also does not have a huge effect on the background indeed. But for sure, for the final production, we need to use the same value. Yes.
Okay. Cool.
Good catch.
Well, it's in purple and orange. I I had to see it.
So we are
Other
not hiding
questions?
anything. Yeah.
Yeah, indeed, indeed. Thank you. Other questions or comments? Well, I think things are progressing here. We have clear next steps. It's clear to more or less clear to me. So thanks very much. Okay, I think that's about it, unless there's any other urgent business. Did I skip anything, Rebecca? Otherwise, we close the
I
meeting here.
thought it was not muted, so I was talking to you. So no, I think it's all fine. Sorry, I mean I should have just.
Okay, great. Thanks, everyone. And in general, if you have updates, please let us know. And we were happy to call a meeting. And probably there's other people who want to show an update as well, as you can tell from this meeting. So I think there's no time to have another meeting still this year. So everyone, please have an excellent break. And as you come up with updates, please ping us in the new year, and we can organize a meeting. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
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 Happy New Year.
Bye-bye.
Bye.